Happy Monday. You guys have a Super Bowl hangover? I sure do, because if that wasn't the most taxing second half I've ever been witness to, I don't know what is. Thanks for joining us for Fantasy Sports today. Chris Meaney, Ashley Docking here with you, as always. And Chris, I know every single person, I don't care what you say. I don't care if you're a Pats fan. I don't care if you're a Falcons fan. I don't care if you're not a fan of either team. You thought that game was over. You had to have thought that game was over. There's always the outside chance. You're like, well, Tom Brady, well, yeah. Bill Belichick, okay, maybe, but in all honesty, I don't think that you saw it going down like that. What was it?
No, like
31 unanswered points?
Yeah. I mean, 21-0, 28-3.
Yeah.
At 28-3, I thought it was over.
Okay.
At halftime, I thought, okay, you know, it's Tom Brady, it's the New England Patriots. They can do this. They can come back. It's just a matter of getting some stops, getting some turnovers,
yeah.
And that's exactly what happened. They got that big turnover, that forced fumble, and right from there, you could just see the look in Brady's eye. You could just see him. It immediately gets up off the bench, starts warming up, and you could just see the look, and it's like, uh-oh. If you're a Falcons fan, if you're an Atlanta fan, if you're the owners of the Falcons, maybe you want to go back up to the top of the booth, because as soon as they came down on the field, everything was just kind of all over for them. But yeah, an unbelievable game, Ashley.
Well, if you missed it, if you were maybe in transit or had another familial obligation that you will resent your loved ones for later on, we have the highlights for you presented by Bob Papa as well as Charles Davis. Take a look.
Super Bowl 51 pitted the New England Patriots in quest of their first team to win five Super Bowls. Atlanta appearing in their second Super Bowl, trying to win their first after a fumble by LeGarrette Blount. Touchdown run for Devontae Freeman. Atlanta up 7-0 in the second quarter. And then Matt Ryan goes up top, Charles, to Austin Hooper.
How about that? That's a play that New England liked to run with Rob Gronkowski. He's now playing. Atlanta taking a page from their playbook. They go up 14.
And Tom Brady gets fooled. Robert Alford with an 82-yard pick six.
You know, overall, he had a massive game. That pick six punctuated things for him. But boy, oh boy, you don't see Tom Brady get fooled very often.
Then in the second half of the third quarter, Tevin Coleman with a touchdown catch, and suddenly Atlanta's up 28-3.
Once again, New England is the team that never blinks. Doesn't matter what the score, they keep fighting. And James White, boy, did he make plays after play for New England. And then Dante Hightower with that sack right there. Alan Branch recovers it, and New England has a fighting chance.
Tom Brady finds Danny Amendola for the touchdown. Now they need the two-point conversion. James White takes the direct snap. Boom. Now New England is within 8. But they needed some heroics from Julian Edelman.
How about that? Remember 2 years ago, Jermaine Kearse made a play that gave Seattle a chance. David Tyree's catch comes to mind. And then James White powers in. But they've got to get 2 more points.
Danny Amendola just breaks the plane, so we're tied at 28, going to the first ever overtime in Super Bowl history, and the Patriots go 75 yards. James White with the touchdown run.
How about the power? Getting it in. People wondered if the knee went down first. I think he broke the plane as the knee went down, and Tom Brady, one more time, a Super Bowl champion, the 5th time for himself.
He becomes the first quarterback to win 5. Bill Belichick, the first head coach to win 5. Congratulations from the commissioner, Roger Goodell. A kiss from wife Giselle. And Bill Belichick wins his 5th Super Bowl. And the New England Patriots and Tom Brady victorious in Houston as they beat Atlanta in overtime.
There you go. The greatest of all time, Tom Brady. 5 Super Bowl rings, 1 for each finger. And what a performance by him, Chris. It's almost unbelievable that it actually happened that way.
Yeah, it really is. You know, lost in that highlight pack was the great grab from
Julio Jones, yeah.
And just as much as I want to give Brady and Belichick so much, like, yes,
credit.
I get it. You know, 5 Super Bowls, 24 records set in that game. Like, not just from a game standpoint, from like a playoff career standpoint, Super Bowl standpoint, like most ever passing attempts, Brady, like just an example in the Super Bowl. But missed from all of that was just the collapse from Atlanta. Was just a couple plays to go to me. The sack fumble, fine, I'll give Matt Ryan a little bit credit, but just at one point, Ashley, when they're up 28-3,
yep.
They ran the ball 5 times and they threw the ball 12 times. I mean, they're on the 20 in field goal range. Just ice it. Don't take a sack. That's all you need to do is not take a sack. Don't take penalties. Both of those things happened, and then here we career, Brady with that comeback, just unbelievable. It's crazy.
Well, I don't know. I think they did run the ball, and then there was a holding penalty, so then they went to a throw, which was the incomplete pass. So, I don't know. I think that everyone's giving them it's easy to look for things that went wrong, but in the flow of the game, you've got to make decisions, and whether they're right or wrong, if it works, if that catch is complete, we're not even talking about this today.
Sure.
So, it's a game of inches for a reason, but before we get to the reaction from the Falcons, I think we have some sound.
Yeah, we do some Brady. I mean, just unbelievable, too, some of the catches. I mean, saw the Edelman catch. I mean, everything has happened in the Super Bowl with New England. I mean, Jermaine Kearse a couple years ago, Tyree, Manningham, just unbelievable. Yep. So here's Brady on just the offense and really, you know, how they came back.
I wasn't thinking much, you know. I was thinking, you know, we just got to score, and then we scored the touchdown, and it was 9, and then we got the turnover? There was a lot of that happened tonight, so. And I got hit pretty hard, so. It's just, 28-12, and then we got 28-20, and then 28-28, and then 34-28. So another play coming down to the end. How about that?
Tom's had a lot of great ones, but tonight was one of them. I'm sure he'd like to have the interception back, but he made a lot of great throws. Edelman's catch was an unbelievable play, as was Julio Jones's catch on the sideline. That was another tremendous play. Look, there's a lot of great players out there playing tonight, and they played great. Fortunately, we were able to make a couple more plays than our opponents were, but it was a great football game and a lot of great players on the field.
I knew I had like good feel on it. I didn't know if like maybe a piece of the ball was touching, but I knew that I don't know what the dang rule is. No one knows what a rule is for a catch is. So, and I was like, I'm pretty sure I got it.
That was the sickest catch I think I've ever seen. Like, Julio Jones were like, wow, he broke his toe that he already had turf toe on as he rammed it into the turf to make sure that he got both feet down. But Edelman kind of took the cake. A few things, though, from that, Chris. So I'm kind of surprised that Belichick called Julian Edelman Edelman. Usually in situations like that, they use, like, first names or nicknames. So that kind of goes to the state of mind of Belichick, just all business. Yeah. Tom Brady for sure had a concussion, so congratulations to the NFL and another successful implementation of your concussion protocol on the field.
See how excited they were? Like, they felt like they stole one. I mean, at halftime, everyone's talking about Belichick being genius, but, you know, there was a point in that game where you're looking at Belichick and he's just on the sidelines and he looks confused. He looks defeated. And then it's just how the tables turned. It's just crazy.
One of my favorite cutaways was after Devontae Freeman scored the first touchdown and they cut away to Belichick on the sideline and he's just like, writing notes down like, that's not going to happen.
Well,
trying to make
you don't see that too often, Belichick, you know, halftime adjustments, but, you know, he had said, you know, going into the third quarter, I forget what the reporter was, it's like, talk to Belichick, but he had said the adjustments he made them during the first and second quarter. You could see him on the sidelines with all of his defensive players. No, this, you want to do this, you want to do that. So, I mean, the offense was good to start for Atlanta.
There's always two sides to every story, and although Dan Quinn didn't make excuses, he definitely alluded to the fact that maybe his team should have stopped at Shell to fuel up.
I think for sure we ran out of gas some, and I don't know what the time of possession was. I didn't look at that, but I can tell you how hard these guys battled for it. And we knew it was going to come down to the end for sure. And just at the end, to have the scores back-to-back, that was the difference for sure.
The one positive was we had the ball for 20 minutes, and that was a great part in the first half. And I think, you know, as the game goes on, that gets tough on the defense in these Super Bowls. Everyone's expending a lot of energy, and, you know, when we got it rolling there in the second half, it was tough. It's tough to slow us down.
We just did some things to get us off schedule a little bit and put us behind the chains, penalties and just mistakes. And so, I don't think it was one thing or another. Just a couple things here and there that kind of got us off schedule, and we weren't able to overcome that.
Honestly, as much as it was exciting to watch that comeback, my heart breaks for Matt Ryan.
Like, it's one of the biggest collapses I've ever seen. I don't know what side to sit on. It's Tom Brady, and he had the fact that he had to get those two-point combos. But, I mean, he couldn't take a sack there, Ryan.
You couldn't take. He had to throw it away.
He had to throw it away.
He had to throw it away. All right. Well, either way, we win because it was a great game to witness. Yeah. Thanks for sticking with us through our Super Bowl 51 coverage. We'll be back with some fantasy and news and notes on the other side of this break. Welcome back to Fantasy Sports Today. Time for some news and notes. And although it pulls on my heartstrings, not so much this guy over here, but Paul Pierce.
Paul Pierce is on the rundown
because he made his final appearance at the Garden yesterday, taking on the Boston Celtics. Now, he hasn't played since December 31st. I'll give him that. He is not in the rotation for the Clippers at all. But for sentimental reasons, he started the game, played 4 minutes, went scoreless, sat on the bench as his team was losing with 19 seconds left. Doc Rivers subbed him back in. Isaiah Thomas sagged off him. He hit an amazing three-point shot that made no difference in the game.
Chanting with the fans.
I know. Isaiah Thomas, we want Paul Pierce. Anyway, the point of the matter is that he's been a very storied player in the Boston Celtics franchise. He brought them a championship in 2008. He was also the MVP. It was just nice. He kissed the leprechaun. The whole crowd was behind him. It was a nice moment. I don't know if you agree. I liked it.
No, I agree, but it just could have happened last year. That should have been it. It should have been over. But yeah, you know, you're right. I mean, I like those storylines too, Ashley. Yeah. And Isaiah Thomas, let's just get into him because he had another unbelievable night as well. But for him, you know, on the sidelines or on the court, you know, chanting with the rest of the fans to come on. But yeah, another wicked performance from Isaiah Thomas. And just over the last month, this guy is averaging 4.4 threes per game. He's shooting like 49% from the floor, and he's averaging 35.9 points per game. We talked about how we thought maybe he could be the starting guard for the Eastern Conference All-Star team over Kyrie and over Lowry, and it's warranted. This guy's been unbelievable. 22.7 field goal attempts per game over the last 30, and to shoot 49% from the field, it's unreal. Avery Bradley is close to returning from Achilles injury. I'm sure he'll cut in a little bit. Mm-hmm. He'll also be limited, but what Isaiah Thomas is doing right now is really, really unbelievable. A lot of the attention goes to Russell Westbrook.
Yeah.
This guy needs some attention too.
20 points in 35 straight contests for Isaiah Thomas. He leads the league in fourth quarter scoring. And I was going to tell another story about Paul Pierce and how he got his nickname, The Truth.
Did you do it?
Yeah. Okay, in 2001, after the Lakers beat the Celtics, Paul Pierce scored 42 points, okay, on 13 of 19 shooting. And Shaquille O'Neal grabbed a reporter and said, come here, quote me on this. He said, I don't care what you say. He's like, Paul Pierce is the mother, father, truth. He used a little bit of different colorful language.
I thought you were going to say that.
Mother, father, truth. He said, I knew the kid was good. I didn't know he was that good.
Yeah.
He is the truth. Zach LaVine was thought to be the truth in Minnesota. He was definitely the truth in the dunk contest, but he tore his ACL. He gone. What does this mean for that team? Because they, to me, were what Philadelphia is going to be next year.
A lot of this young talent, a lot of up and comers. And I'm a little bit disappointed with, you know, their performance this year. I thought a little bit of up and coming. You know, you got Kat. You got so many nice pieces. Wiggins is taking a step back, in my opinion. You know what? Yeah, so LaVine is done for the season. Does that mean Chris Dunn's going to step up? Does that mean Rubio is going to be, you know, you have a hard time of him staying on the floor as well? Is he going to get traded? Yeah. Maybe he gets traded. Shabazz Muhammad is somebody that I've had on my roster for a couple weeks now. He doesn't blow you away with a lot of the other stats, but he is averaging about 10. He gets you about 10 to 15 points over the past couple weeks because the minutes have gone from, you know, 15 minutes a game to 20, 25. He's hitting 30 over the past couple games too. So you could do worse on the waiver wire. I always say that. He's not going to get you any assists, but he can get you 4 or 5 boards a game. So he could really help you out in leagues, deeper leagues, 14-team leagues. Maybe you just need some points. He can get you a 3-2. But just keep an eye on him because he was on the rise even before LaVine got hurt.
I'm going to throw Tyus Jones. So I have a feeling that there's going to be a lot of two guard situations in Minnesota. And Tyus Jones, I believe he was the Summer League MVP this year, even though they lost to the Chicago Bulls in the Summer League tournament. It was a great game, by the way. Denzel Valentine hit a game-winning three back and forth. It was amazing. But Tyus Jones, so 24 minutes, 10.6 assists, 2 steals, 3 rebounds. Keep an eye on him. I know if you're in deeper leagues, it might be worth a pickup if you have an empty spot or you have someone that's really underperforming. Yeah, maybe some DFS play depending on what you like. And then quickly, we have an NHL injury to talk about. Fabbri has an injured ACL.
So a couple things, you know, before we get out of here. Fabbri got the ACL injury. He's done for the season. Home ice advantage, we'll get into a little bit more. Paul Stastny is somebody who's got 10 points in his last 11 games, playing on the top line, winning a lot of faceoffs. Mm-hmm. And then I'll go to Chris Middleton, who's expected back this week, going to make his season debut on Wednesday, dealing with a hamstring injury. This is someone who averaged 20 points per game last season, can really help you out. On the flip side of that, pick him up if you can. Stash him. Well, obviously, it's not a stash anymore. But if you're a Jabari Parker owner, you need to be a little bit concerned. Okay. You need to start taking flyers for him because somebody who's averaging 20 points a game, getting some double-doubles of late, there's just too many bodies now. Malcolm Brogdon, another guy that we like. Some of these guys, you know, there's another body coming in. Go ahead and see what you can get for Parker because you could maybe get something decent for him. Maybe an owner doesn't realize that Middleton. Middleton's coming back and cut in.
I'm kind of looking at you like this, but it's not about you. It's more about suspicion on Chris Middleton. This guy has surgery on his hamstring. The timeline is that he's going
to
be 6 months gone. September 26th is when he had his surgery. Okay, he's back. Sure. Interesting.
Super freak.
Just saying. Is that James Brown?
Yeah, yeah.
Like it. All right. On that note, we're going to go to break, but we will be back with Dr. Mike Sohn. He's a doctor. He has really important things to say about baseball, and I'm not being facetious, I swear to God. This is Fantasy Sports Today. We're going to change gears. We're going to talk some baseball now. And more so than ever, there's a big concern around pitchers' arms, relievers, yes, as well as starters. What's good for them? What's not? Can you put an innings cap? Does it matter because it's not a pitch count? Everything's different. So to try and sort this situation out and give us some insight, we welcome in Dr. Mike Sohn now from FanGraphs. How are you, Mike?
I'm doing well. Thanks for asking.
Oh, man, we're so glad to have you on the show. Some of the research and papers that you write on your website, MikeSohn.com, are very, very interesting. I'm not going to lie. Some are over my head. So I'm hoping that you can kind of give us the layman's terms on one in particular, pitcher workload reductions. The theory that limiting workload for pitchers might actually have the reverse effect. It might hinder them more than help them.
Yeah, the idea is that you want to not expose the pitchers to too much stress. But in reality, what we're finding is that you actually have to expose them to that stress to build up their endurance, to build up their muscular strength, and to keep them from getting injured. So in a lot of instances where we're trying to cap innings or we're trying to cap pitches, it's having a counterproductive effect for the pitchers.
Okay.
Mike.
Interesting. I wouldn't have thought that, but
no,
it's...
yeah, it is very interesting. And, you know, Matt Harvey comes to mind with, you know, the innings cap and, you know, pitching so much in the World Series. And a lot of people wanted him shut down and not to pitch any postseason. And then we saw him struggle last year. And in fact, like, we could really just spend probably an hour, Mike, talking about the Mets pitching staff. Basically, all of them had offseason surgery. Let's talk about Harvey. Are you concerned at all with him going into this season? I saw the quote. He had his uppermost rib removed, which has relaxed the muscles that were constricting a nerve bridging from his neck to his shoulder. This guy lost feeling in his right hand last year. What's your take on him, you know, heading into the 2017 season?
So Matt Harvey had thoracic outlet syndrome, which is an impingement of his nerves and his blood vessels going from the spine into his hands. So Harvey had a lot of issues with losing sensation, losing his ability to kind of percept where his arm was in space, and as a result, his command was way off compared to what it's been in previous years. Now, thoracic outlet syndrome is something that isn't seen too often in pitchers. It's more seen in my other line of work, which is ergonomics. So knowing what happens in that surgery, I would not expect it to have a huge impact on his performance. At the same time, kind of where there's smoke, there's fire, and this is not his first major injury, and the biggest predictor of injury is previous injury.
I'm wondering if the biggest predictor of re-injury is when someone has compounding injuries, and I'm talking about Mats, of course, sticking with the Mets, and he had a shoulder injury that sidelined him, but then he actually got surgery for a bone spur in his elbow. Which one are you more concerned about, and from your experience, which one maybe is more inclined to show up again in the future?
I think when you're looking at this type of an injury, the elbow becomes almost a byproduct of what's happening at the shoulder, which becomes a byproduct of how everything is moving throughout the rest of his pitching motion. Once again, previous injury, it can contribute to future injury in the sense that it's impairing his movement, and now he has to adapt a different motor pattern, which results in putting more stress on his elbow.
He was quoted saying that one of the biggest things that he's going to focus on this year is kind of tuning down his velocity. And I know that most people say, you know, the harder you can throw, the more effective a pitcher that you're going to be. But is there any evidence that tuning down your velocity can actually help you if, in fact, you're able to just get a better handle on your control?
Well, it's funny to think that Driveline Baseball, which is a research and training facility out in Seattle, had done a study on their blog not too long ago, and it looked at, is there any relationship between velocity and command issues? And there isn't. In reality, what's probably helpful is if you're doing the exact same movement over and over again, and you're not having to, you know, scale it back or make little changes along the way, that's the most optimal movement pattern that the pitcher is going to have. So sometimes throwing at their hardest is what's going to result in their best command, because it's the most repeatable movement that they have.
Mike, that's interesting, because, you know, in LA, a lot of people think that, you know, Richards, you know, he didn't need Tommy John. He was close to getting it, but he decided to go with stem cell therapy. And we've seen pitchers do this recently. Some go that route, and then others go Tommy John. We saw Masahiro Tanaka do this, and he was successful. I mean, his velocity was right around the same. Do you think more and more pitchers are going to do this? I mean, they see a guy like Garrett Richards. If he was to have a successful season, do you think more pitchers would try to go that way as opposed to having Tommy John?
The idea behind a treatment like that is that it helps speed back the pitcher to recovery. And it all depends on the type of injury that the pitcher has. If they have a totally destroyed UCL, you could have all the, you know, platelet reproduction therapy that you want. And in reality, it's not going to end up helping that pitcher out. So it's got to be a very specific kind of low-grade injury. And it's the same for that other technique that's been discussed recently, the primary repair surgery, which once again cuts down on rehab time. Ultimately, it's up to the discretion of the surgeon to determine how severe the injury is. And I mean, anything that can speed up the rehab process, get these guys back on the field, is obviously of huge benefit. Now, it'll be interesting to see how some of these guys who have had this stem cell therapy, how they return and how they perform, and if they're at a higher risk of re-injury in the future.
Well, do you think that they have a higher risk of re-injury? I mean, I'm looking at Tanaka. I look at his numbers from, you know, pre-needing Tommy John and then after the therapy. I mean, the numbers are basically the same. I mean, the velocity is the same. He threw the slider a little bit more, but that seems to be the pitch that kind of gets these pitchers into trouble.
It's tough to say. What you're kind of concerned with is if you have a replacement surgery, that ligament's never going to be as good as the original ligament that was in the arm. So if you read Jeff Passan's book, The Arm, it talks about how that first UCL you have, that's going to be the best one that's ever in your body. So when you do have that reconstruction therapy or surgery and they put in a new ligament, it's never as strong. So theoretically, if you can heal that first ligament back up and get it to a spot where it's just as strong, you would think that maybe they'd have better long-term results.
Honestly, I'm so intrigued by all of this stuff. And I know we only have like a minute left, Mike, but I actually want to confirm something with you. I think we talked about it a little bit when we were doing the Pitch Talk series. Some of your research is actually with Major League Baseball Players Association. You're kind of helping them out with some of these theories.
Well, I had published a paper on the possible detrimental effects of pitch clocks, and I had submitted it to the players union, and all I know is that there's no pitch clock coming up this season, so I had communicated with them, so I'm not sure if it got used behind the scenes, but I'm not privy to that information.
All right, well, I'm going to give you full credit for it. The man responsible for no pitch clock in Major League Baseball.
I'm going to take all the credit for it.
It sounds good. All right, we got to get out of here, but we thank you so much for your time and so much for your insight. We'll talk to you again soon.
Take care. Thanks for having me.
All right, take care.
Yeah, let's do this again.
Yeah, it's a lot of stuff, but a lot of interesting stuff. Now I'm going to have my eye on Tanaka and Richards to see.
Yeah. Well, Tanaka was fine, so Richards is interesting, but he throws heavy and he throws hard. And
you get two sample sizes, 1 year removed, 2 years removed. We'll see what happens, and we'll see you guys tomorrow on FST. Thanks for joining us.